Thank you for listening to Scandinavian Crimes Podcast. Be sure to check out the episode links and be part of our other social media platforms where you can leave a topic suggestion or even share some of your insights regarding the subject matter of the episode. We will always do our best to provide a well-researched episode, but sometimes due to limited access to information and translation issues, some information can be lost. It is therefore good to do your own research and get a deeper understanding of a case of your own interest. So with that all said, let us start today's episode.
Welcome to Scandinavian Crimes. My name is Devante, and say hello to my lovely co-host, Delilah.
Hi, everyone.
That was so abrupt and quick. And on this podcast, we will cover famous Scandinavian criminals who made their mark throughout Scandinavian history. So this is a very all over the place kind of story. This is going to be the story of Bo Steven Eriksson. Now, he was a Swedish video game developer and also happened to be a criminal from the Uppsala involved in a UK gaming company called Gizmondo. So it's a little wild. So try your best to keep up, because even though we try to arrange the events in the order that they're kind of told and how the events are happened, and for the most part, it's still kind of a trippy back and forth, and it seems a little all over the place, mostly because it's just all over the place for the sake of it. But
well, we all like chaotic stories, so it's gonna be good, I hope. So,
I mean, I hope so. Well, I can't say I hope so too, because obviously I've read it already. But but you know, it's gonna be a crazy ride. So this is a story of Steven. So I'm gonna correct myself because I think it's Stefan, but this is a story of Bo Steffen M. Eriksson, A.K.A. the Banker. Stefan M. Eriksson, born December 14th, 1961, is a Swedish video game developer and criminal from Uppsala involved in a UK gaming company, Gizmondo, with his business partner, Carl Freer, until it became an insolvent in 2005. In February 2006, he became known for wrecking a Ferrari Enzo in Malibu, California, USA. He was a leader of the loose criminal organization, like I mentioned before, the Uppsala Mafia, until he began to develop the Gizmondo. Eriksson became known by Swedish police as Fat Steve, or the Banker, by the local mob in Sweden's fourth largest city of Uppsala, roughly 60 kilometers north of Stockholm. As an auto body shop worker, he started his criminal career with thefts and a three-month prison term in 1981, followed in 1988 by another term of 3.5 years for cocaine and arms-related convictions.
Okay, wait, so he started off in prison because of drugs, and then he got involved with mafia.
Yeah, like he basically
created the mafia.
Yeah, so he basically started off that way and was stealing, and you know, then after that, like you said, drugs and gun related stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then it slowly developed into like I guess a mafia gang thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just the way that this story is written. It's like, if you didn't put that beginning part, it would have been like, what? In the early 90s, Eriksson became the head of a group of Swedish press dubbed the Uppsala Mafia, which was responsible for high-profile, violent crimes up until then rarely seen in the country. Known as a playboy, he often showed off 1,200 horsepower 63 Sea-Ray offshore race boat with a top speed of 56 knots. He named it Snow White and docked it on a small river in downtown Uppsala. With a legal front, the Canon debt collectors collected debts using threats and violence.
So he was, I guess if he's a playboy, I guess also he's somehow handsome in that case. So he was basically playboy, mafia thing, and an auto body shop worker, or used to, like, what is happening right now? And also he's rich as hell, because he have like fancy cars and boats, like those are expensive as hell. Like, what is happening? Okay, continue, sorry. It's just like I'm trying to understand everything. Okay.
Establishing a reputation, they started to dress in expensive suits and hold business meetings in air quotes and exclusive Stockholm hotels, attempting to defraud the Swedish bank Giro Central of 22 million Swedish crowns. Ericsson and the other future executive of Gizmondo was found guilty of fraud and counterfeiting. In 1993 and 1994, Ericsson was sentenced to 10 years in prison, though he only served half his sentence. Court documents showed Ericsson and a partner broke into a man's home, destroyed his property, and punched him repeatedly in the face. Ericsson also held a knife to a man's throat, threatened to cut off his fingers, and finally shoved a gun in the man's mouth. The Swedish police had great difficulty finding people who dared to testify, and the head witness later survived two bomb attacks.
Oh my god. That's terrifying. But I guess that's the mafia thing, I guess.
Yeah, you gotta make sure people don't testify. Threaten, so you just gotta scare them to death.
Yeah. Like putting guns in mouths and stuff is like intense right there.
And bombs.
Oh yeah, the bombs too. I forgot. Like, it's so many things going on right now. I'm just trying to keep up. I like chaotic storytellings, but like, this was on another level.
Yeah, this gets out of control. Now let's see where this one goes.
Wait, he got also half the sentence.
Yeah, like, so he was sentenced to 10 years, but he only got 5. He only served 5.
That's interesting. Okay, continue.
In 2001, Ericsson joined the UK-based company Gizmondo, which intended to rival Nintendo and Sony for the handheld video games market. Ericsson's salary in 2004 was £1.1 million.
Oh my god, okay.
With bonuses amounting to another £145,000 and a car allowance of £5,000 per month. In an attempt to promote the product, Ericsson competed at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Where am I? He arrived in the gray Enzo Ferrari and entered the race in the Gizmondo-sponsored Ferrari 360 Medina GTC in 2005, but retired during the morning with mechanical troubles. In October 2005, a Swedish paper revealed irregularities in the business dealings of Gizmondo and the criminal past of some members of management, including Ericsson. Ericsson and others resigned, and the company filed for bankruptcy after using up $300 million, 90% in its last 6 months.
Oh my god, thank you, someone who actually busted them. Because, like, I'm just thinking, how did he even get hired? Why is he getting so much money? Like, I can't understand how is he so... well, at least they got, you know, busted. But the bankruptcy of... Oh, yeah. I wonder how he even, you know, handled that afterwards. Because he was part of the... No, he was hired, but he never was... Wait, they were a part of the executives, right? So he was kind of involved with the top tier.
Yeah, so like what I'm assuming happened up until this point was because of his criminal and mafia related background. And at one point they were having executive meetings as a gang. You know, once you reach a certain bracket of income and certain environment, I'm pretty sure he ran into some executives who... hire him.
Yeah.
So basically they didn't check his background because, you know, back in the day, 2001, the only people, this is actually unfortunately a statistical fact, the only people who typically experienced any form of background checks were those who were of minority descent. Those are the ones who experience large levels of like background checks, mostly because, you know, it wasn't really standard yet. It was kind of like a prejudice thing that was going on because, you know, early 2000s, 90s, that wasn't really a thing anymore. It was mostly a word of mouth thing.
So you know what? I think that's interesting because, like, I don't trust the rich people at all. Like, I don't trust where their money comes from. I don't trust, like, I know there are rich people who honestly, you know, got their money through hard efforts and everything, but, like, some rich people and be like, where do you get the money from, really? Like,
well, a good chunk of A large chunk of the world's money comes from very dirty activities.
Yup. That's why I feel like most of the rich people have some involvement in, you know, shady stuff. Like, some kind of involvement. I'm not saying, like, all of them, but, you know, I feel like rich people should get, like, more background checks than, you know, those who do not have the best, you know, opportunities and such, I guess.
I mean, it's a lot easier to hide criminal activity when you have the funds to hide them, so... I mean, even then, background checks would require, like, FBI-level background checks, you know, offshore accounts and, you know, auditing their income, which, like I said, a lot of people have the money to hide it. Mm-hmm. So, it's unfortunate, but that is a very real thing, and even the prejudice of background checks...
And also, I don't think the, you know, authorities can even, like, do anything, because, you know, the rich people have... You know, people they know, and probably know people in the, you know, lawyers or police officers or whatever, you know. So it's...
No, and even, because I don't know if he was heading this direction, but even the thing that rich people do as well, which I believe he did do in this story, if I remember correctly, but one thing that they do... is even dirty money. So you know how you like clean money, right? Basically, basically, you know, you take dirty money. So let's say you're a drug dealer and you had $1.1 million in cocaine money. Basically, what you do is you take that $1.1 million, you buy a legitimate business or legitimate property, and then you sell it for clean money because the revenue you're making from the business is clean, but how you got the business is dirty. So, that's usually what a lot of situations like that happen, where they're cleaning their money by getting investment properties and stuff like that. So I'm not surprised to see a story like this where, you know, someone, especially in the early 2000s, who he was white, so he didn't really have anything that was like an immediate red flag to other executives. So he was able to probably get away with a lot, clean his money in multiple ways. And that's how he got so far.
Oh, it actually reminds me, like, this whole thing is very similar to the series Peaky Blinders. I don't know if anyone has watched it, but I was just, like, thinking of... They were kind of, like, going from the bottom up and doing shady stuff, going to, like, gaming... Like, I'm not going to spoil anything either, but, like, how it evolved, it was, like, they went from nothing and then they became rich and then they talked to people who had power and they kind of... use that into their advantage and stuff. So I just feel like this is the same thing, because he was rich before he applied to work in the gaming, you know, to get away from the mafia, I think. But it didn't really go that well, so obviously. But let's continue and see what else we got for Stefan.
In August, shortly before his resignation, Gizmondo relocated Ericsson to California for its U.S. launch. Subsequently, questions arose regarding how a convicted felon like Ericsson was able to enter the country. In early 2006, with ideas similar to now defunct Gizmondo's smart ads, the virtual mobile operator MVNO, Ciro Mobile, was started through Ericsson's earlier partners. So this paragraph was... kind of like what I was thinking the whole time. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but I was like, how did he get a job? How was he able to even get into the U.S.? Because even as a U.S. citizen, like myself, obviously, you can't even leave the country with a criminal record, let alone enter the country with a criminal record.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, I don't know how this is possible. I guess rich people just get like a free pass to do whatever they can and whatever they want to, honestly, because, you know, even though it's in the, you know, late or early 90s, it's still very, you know, recent. So I think America was still very careful, you know, with criminal acts and, you know, people who have any kind of criminal history. Should just go around roaming in one's country, I guess. I don't know. I just feel like that's rich people get free passes, I guess. I don't know. This is so interesting, but very scary at the same time. I hope they, you know, are better with how they do things now. Just gonna...
Well, at least in this part, this is like 2005, 2006, which is crazy because this is post 9/11, which means I'm like, he still got in the country so easily. But like you said, who knows? But let's see where this goes, because I'm assuming, well, this is going to only get worse because, you know, after the whole bankruptcy, it's going to kind of just go downhill. Mm. So on February 21st, 2006, Erickson lost control of an Enzo Ferrari sports car valued at over $2 million while allegedly driving at a high speed and intoxicated along Pacific Coast Highway in California. The car careened off the embankment outside of Malibu and hit the pole at 162 miles per hour, which is, you know, in kilometers, 261 kilometers per hour. The impact of the crash was so violent, it split the car in half. Erickson and the Irish-born American Trevor Carney were found at the site. Erickson claimed to be the passenger in the Ferrari and that a man he only knew as Dietrich.
Wait, how are they even alive? Are they made of metal? The car was split in half and they were driving in 261 kilometers per hour. You die if you drive, like, I think it was, I think you can actually have serious injuries if you drive faster with, like, than 90 kilometers per hour.
I mean, honestly, off of that alone, it's probably strictly just chance that they happen to survive. Because it depends on the impact. Because let's say the car splits clean and separates, the pole did take most of the momentum out the car. So by the time the split happens, if, which obviously did happen in this case, which is very rare, that's not going to happen all the time, it probably split in a way that allowed the momentum to ease off the car and the car split and then they survived, which is out of control because, like I said, that's a rare occurrence.
Your luck. Like how? Okay. Okay. Well, he's super lucky in that case. And the driver, too. Dietrich? This sounds like it's like German. I don't know. Kinda. Wait, does. No, it was an Irish person, right? Irish born American. No, that was Trevor.
Yeah, Trevor was.
The driver Carney. Was like another guy. Okay. Three people.
Yeah.
But that's what he said.
So Carney claimed to be the passenger of the Mercedes-Benz SLR McLaren that was racing the Ferrari. Neither Dietrich nor the Mercedes was to be found, and the police concluded that Erickson was the driver and Carney the passenger, and that neither Dietrich nor McLaren existed. Furthermore, the extent of Erickson's injuries amounted to a cut lip, and blood was found on the driver's side airbag. Investigators confirmed the existence of the videotape of the accident shot from inside the car. The video showed the speedometer giving 199 miles per hour, which is 320 kilometers per hour, reading right before it malfunctioned due to the crash. The tape is believed to be with Carney. Erickson brandished a business card claiming to be a deputy police commissioner with the San Gabriel Valley Transit Authority, whose founder was later arrested for perjury in connection with the case. And Carney borrowed a phone in the passerby's car where he tucked away the magazine for a Glock and a pistol. Two men showed up to speak with Erickson, claimed to be from the Department of Homeland Security. On March 29th, 2006, Nicole Parson, Erickson's fiance, was pulled over while driving.
I'm sorry. He had a fiance.
Yes.
Okay. Continue.
Nicole Parson, Erickson's fiance, was pulled over while driving a 2005 Mercedes-Benz SLR McLaren. She was pulled over because the officer found the car's European license plate suspicious. It was discovered that Parson was not did not have a valid driver's license. The police found the car to be unregistered, carrying British license plates, and illegally exported from Britain. Further investigation revealed that the crashed red Ferrari, a second black Ferrari, and two other Mercedes-Benz cars were also unregistered and illegally exported.
So they're just like crashing cars. They're basically just going around and crashing expensive cars.
And basically technically his story of the other McLaren or the, well, not the other McLaren, the Mercedes was true, technically, and the whole race with the McLaren and everything, because they all exported the same cars. So it seems like he was racing somebody else who was driving one of his other cars who didn't crash. Because they were all, it says they all were exported illegally. So he had multiple cars, but all the cars that he had were the same description.
I mean, for what? What was the reason for him to do this? It's just like to win a bet or something? This is so stupid. I'm so sorry, but like, I am this guy. These cars, what have the cars done to deserve this? I don't know how to feel about this.
I think it's mostly just he was
a rich playboy.
He was good just because he could. Yeah, just because
he could. There was no reason. He have a fiance out of nowhere. He's in the mafia. He's in my Swedish accent is showing because I'm like, what is going on? Continue with this.
At least we're getting close to the end. So it was found that all five cars valued at $10.8 million were leased in Britain. Moreover, lease payments for them had ceased. And after the export, the Mercedes was reported stolen in Britain with an insurance payout. Footage of Ericsson in his black Ferrari shot by founders of the car enthusiast website CarPaparazzi.com was held as evidence against him by European authorities.
Yes.
Police raided Ericsson's Bel Air home in April 8, 2006. Ericsson prepared to leave the U.S. and was arrested on suspicion of embezzlement, grand theft auto, drunken driving, cocaine possession, and a weapons charge stemming from the Magnum handgun encountered during the search.
Grand theft auto.
That means he stole the car.
I thought that was a game. I didn't think it was like a way of being suspicious of something or like, I didn't know that. Okay, continue.
Yeah, the game. Yeah, Grand Theft Auto is, that's what they call it because in the game you get to steal cars.
Wow. I did not know that. Okay, continue.
I'm so done. He initially faced up to 14 years in prison, which was later reduced in a plea bargain. A little while later in the case, a misdemeanor hit and run and driving without a California license and insurance were also added in relation to a Porsche Cayenne allegedly driven by Ericsson rear-ending an SUV near his Bel Air home in January 4th. On May 9, 2006, police raided the San Gabriel Valley Transit Authority, arresting its owner and confiscating guns, badges, and a vehicle equipped to be an unmarked police car. On November 3rd, 2006, a mistrial was declared after a two-week trial when the jury was deadlocked 10-2 toward convicting Ericsson. Ericsson was represented by trial by Jim Parkman, who successfully represented former HealthSouth CEO Richard Scrushy. Ericsson was also represented by Parkman's partner, William White, as well as Los Angeles criminal attorney Alec Rose. The prosecution has indicated their intent to retry the case. So, at this point, after everything they got him on, they were able to get a deadlock on the jury, which caused a mistrial. It basically means there was not sufficient enough evidence, and essentially they had to retry the case again. Which means, once again, his luck kicked in.
Yeah, he has so much luck. He was first set, like, he was faced up to 14 years in prison. And then he got this luck again. And I guess his rich money to pay for good lawyers who could, you know, do their job. And, you know, I don't know. I don't like this. I don't like this at all. He's just getting what he wants, basically. And he has so much luck. He's cheating the system, basically. Right? He's basically cheating this, like, the whole system. That's crazy. I guess I just have to be rich and I can do whatever I want to do. And then I can have luck and just, like, do whatever. I guess the moral of the story is, like, be rich and be free to do whatever you feel like.
Ericsson accepted the plea bargain for 3 years in jail and deportation. He pleaded guilty to 2 counts of embezzlement and 1 count of illegal gun possession. He avoided an auto theft charge. Ericsson was released from prison on January 21st, 2008. He was deported back to Sweden, where he soon received an 18-month prison sentence for extortion and aggravated assault after pouring petrol on a target of his debt collection services.
Oh my.
That's out of control.
That is super out of control.
In October 14, 2014, oh, what the fuck is going on with me today?
In October 2014,
he was facing further charges of possession of cocaine and other drugs and driving under the influence of drugs. In March 2015, the stage play, you're going to have to say that one,
Chocksteffe,
premiered in his hometown of Uppsala, based on his life in the Uppsala Mafia, Gizmondo, and the subsequent car crash that propelled him into global notoriety. And even though that's the end of all the sequence of this crazy event, the out of control part is he's free.
Yeah.
This man is, he's free. This is 2014, 2015. Even though he didn't really,
like, murder anyone, he was spreading
chaos.
Chaos, and people were afraid of him because he went around threatening people. He almost killed people with a bomb thing and stuff, and the gun in your mouth. Even though he might have not triggered, pulled the trigger, he still put fear in people. And he was doing whatever he felt like, and that's because he had money. And I guess he's also probably charming because he had a fiance, and also he was like a playboy. So I feel like he had some way, he have a good skill in communication, in, I guess, which probably helped him in a lot of ways and getting, you know, knowing people and the right people. And I guess the moral of the story is basically be rich, have good communication skills, and you can do whatever you want to.
That's essentially what it's like to be a rich executive, knowing the right people, communicating to the right people, and having the funds to back up your ideas. And that, my friend, on this planet Earth, is how you get far. And being able to serve the minimal amount of prison time for some of the most extreme crimes you can commit, and several at that, and still have a life. There are people who went on.
And he's still, he in 2014, you said he committed more stuff, and like driving under the influence, having drugs, and like it, I feel like he tried to change by being hired in the game company thing, but then he just went back to his bad behavior. So like, I guess he tried, but it just didn't go that well, and he just kept going downhill ever since he was little. And I think that even though you have money, I don't think he was quite happy. Or maybe he was. It's hard to tell.
I don't know. This story was all over the place. But let me know what y'all think. You know, on Facebook, Instagram, all the social medias. Let me know what y'all feel about this one. I know it's kind of chaotic. And trust me, it was a headache just even reading and trying to deal with this. But let me know what you think about situations like this, as well as recommendations for other cases and stuff like that as well. And we will catch you in the next one.
Yes, but I have a food recommendation. I want to say that this one thing, which is like, I think we should like eat noodle soup, like ramen, spicy ramen. That's really good. Okay, because I'm gonna eat it now, so that's why I wanted you guys to join the vibe. Okay, that's all.
I'm so dead. It's a peace out, everybody.
Bye.